One, two, three, four.
I'm really interested both in the kind of formal aspect of characters who are channeling language, who are speaking the words of other people, and in characters who are actually aware of how little agency they actually have, who have passivity forced upon them, who perhaps even embrace their passivity to a certain extent, but eventually seek out locations where they can enact their agency.
Katie Kitamura is the author of 5 novels, most recently Audition and Intimacies, which was named one of the New York Times 10 best books of 2021, long-listed for the National Book Award and the Penn Faulkner Award, and a finalist for a Joyce Carol Oates Prize. She is a recipient of the Rome Prize in Literature, fellowships from the Kullman Center and the Lannan Foundation, and many other honors. Her work has been translated into 21 languages. She teaches in the Creative Writing Program at New York University. Katie Kitamura, welcome to The Creative Process.
Thank you for having me.
So I've really been enjoying Audition. I've completed it in one sitting. It made me think of this expression, and I don't have the precise quote for it. It's just something in my memory, but I think it's Zen. Anyone can appreciate flowers in their season, but it requires a finer sense to see the beauty of the grass beneath the snow. And I think it's your voice and your writing also in other books, although your voice definitely changes in your earlier works. But you leave all these spaces, a kind of unfinished canvas for the reader to fill in and make it their own. There's a lot of restraint and ambiguity. And with Audition, there's multiple interpretations. You know, I don't want to overemphasize your earlier life or training as a ballet dancer, but it made me think of how in classical ballet, dancers can often learn multiple roles within a production. And really amazing to me when I was told this, you probably have more direct experience of it. A dancer might perform a lead role one day, maybe a supporting role, maybe even a mirror, have to dance on the opposite side of a formation on another performance. And I thought, what a fluid sense of identity and what is true and what your sense of self is. So I wonder, did this kind of open your mind to multiple interpretations? You know, how do you sense that as you're working your way through a character as you were writing Audition? And I'm not using the character's name because the main character is not named again.
No, that's right. And Mia, thank you so much for that incredibly generous response to the book. I mean, I'll start with the first part of your question, which I think has to do with negative spaces within the book. And I have a very powerful sense that a book is made in collaboration with a reader. And I think that's true of almost every book. And I wanted it to be especially true of this book. So the feeling that I had when I was writing was that I needed to make a structure that was airy and capacious enough for the reader to step inside and have enough space to make the book alongside me. There's a line in the book where the central character, who is an actor in rehearsals for a new play, says that a performance is made in the space between the audience and the actor, in that space of interpretation. That's what I wanted to happen in this book. And so that really meant that there had to be a lot of blanks or implied spaces where the reader could bring their own interpretation and create their own version of the narrative. But at the same time, I had to try to offer enough structure so that there were landmarks or there were kind of posts along the way. Your second question about dancing is so interesting because I had never thought about it, but I think the narrative structure of those story ballets, which were some of the biggest stories of my childhood, I grew up watching Swan Lake, Giselle, La Bayadere. These were stories that were as present to me as anything that I read. Those story ballets are often split in two parts in a way. You have the white swan and the black swan. In Giselle, you have the young girl, and then you have the shade, the kind of ghost who comes to haunt her lover. Very similar in La Bayadere. And the structure of this novel is in two parts, and it's two versions in a way of the same character. And now that you said it, I wonder if in some way, without realizing it, that narrative structure had really seeped into my brain. I often find that a lot of my influences do come from my early childhood reading and kind of cultural intake. I read Agatha Christie novels almost compulsively as a child. And although I don't write mysteries in the conventional sense, I think the mystery genre is very much present in a lot of my work, especially in my novel, A Separation, which is in a lot of ways a missing persons novel. So it's interesting to go back and see, you know, writing a book is interesting because in a lot of ways you don't know exactly what you've written and where it's come from until you've finished writing it and you start talking about it with other people.
Yeah, so much happens in, you know, the grass beneath the snow or what goes on underneath in the water of our subconscious. And you do have this doubling. There's the character Hannah. There's another character called Anna.
Yes.
They're not the same, but it makes you think about it. And they're kind of mother lover figures, you know. And then the main character, it's all through her point of view mainly. But then, as you say, and as you also discuss, she is an actress. We forgot to say that she's an actress. And you did discuss, I mean, I just love anything that's about performance and the creative process, obviously. And you talk about there's the thing that comes on stage or within the pages of a book. But there's also all the story, the interpersonal stories that might happen between the actors. They go into it, but mostly we're not privy to that. So I find that is another sense of mystery. But yeah, there is a great sense of mystery throughout audition as well. And this anticipation, but not like there's a murder or anything, but you feel at some stage there could be. The murder, in my interpretation, is there can be a loss of youth or a loss of a role, you know, as an actor moves on. And then there are actors who are in their prime and then through old age, they lose something. So there's that loss, I think, without there being a murder in a traditional sense.
I mean, I love that interpretation. I think one of the things that I was interested in this novel was to think about whether or not it would be possible to create through structure and form some of the same tension that we generally associate with plot. So when you said that there's not a murder, but you feel like there could be a murder, I was hoping that I could use the structure of the novel to create momentum and tension. So even though nothing seems to be happening, the gap between the two halves, I hope would create that kind of sense of dread and anxiety. And I hope that through that structure, I could create something that might even be considered a quote unquote plot twist in a way. So, you know, I'm always thinking about what are the tools that are available to me as a writer. And of course, plot is a major tool that we can use. But so is structure. So I was interested to see if I could press structure into service to do some of the work that plot does. I mean, you're absolutely right that the novel is very concerned with aging and with the way that we say goodbye to past versions of ourselves. I'm very preoccupied with the sense that, you know, we live by and live amongst incommensurate narratives, stories about marriage, about love, about art making, and the sense that we're always living with multiple versions of ourselves that can't fully be reconciled is very much in the kind of air of this novel. And I think, of course, one of the examples that I always use to try to explain this idea is that all of us have that experience, I think, or at least I do, of looking back at a younger version of yourself and almost not recognizing who that person was. There's a divide between the various versions of ourselves, the identities that we've enacted over the course of our lives. I was very interested when I published my last novel, which is called Intimacies, which is quite explicitly about a woman who's really in the middle of her life. She's in her late 30s or so. At one point, she says to a friend, "We're not young women." The thing that was quite fascinating to me is that when the book came out, many people referred to the central character as a young woman moves to The Hague, which is where the book is set, to take a job working as a simultaneous interpreter. And this was really interesting to me because I think it's part of an overarching cultural trend whereby we think that story is something that happens to younger people, that becoming is something that is the province of youth. And so in the novel, there are kind of two examples of creative coming into being stories. One is the younger character, a young man called Xavier, who becomes enmeshed in the life of the central character, this actress. And he has a kind of quite conventional narrative that I think is recognizable to most people, which is that when we first meet him, he's a young man, he's a little bit lost, he doesn't quite know what he wants to do with his life. And by the end of the novel, he is somebody who is making work, who has found his voice, so to speak. And that is a quite, you know, traditional Bildungsroman narrative. The central character, who is very much in the middle of her life, and as you said, is saying goodbye to previous versions of herself and maybe greeting future versions of herself, her narrative is much more indeterminate. And I think to some extent that's a reflection of how we create stories for women in the middle of their lives. It's surprising to me, well, not surprising maybe, but something that I've noticed is that recently there have been quite a few novels about women in menopause and perimenopause, whether it's Miranda July's All Fours or Dana Spiotta's novel. And this was really interesting to me because it is a period of enormous transition, just as coming of age is a period of enormous transition, but it is a kind of narrative terrain that has been underexplored. And so I think one of the reasons why in this novel the central characters' narratives are much more splintered and fragmented is because there's this sense that there isn't a firm narrative for her to follow. She is an actor at some point. She's an actor and she's in rehearsals for a play. And at some point she says that the part is eluding her. There's something frustrating about the role as it's been written, and there isn't any clarity. And she starts to wonder even if the playwright has maybe not really committed to the characters or really understood the characters. But instead, I think the playwright is interested in some of the same things that I'm interested in, which is this sense that their narratives of middle life are not always firmly set and they don't follow a single linear path.
Yeah, and she's sort of a mystery to herself too. And at one point, because you suggest so many things, so you're not spelling it all out. And at one point towards the end, I was thinking, oh, is she actually entering a kind of Alzheimer's or something? Does she not know what's happened in her life? And people are just said that, yo, you were a monster. And I saw no evidence that she was a monster at any stage. But it's interesting because you talk about her. Yes, she is in the middle of her life. She's not a young woman. But I think because she's an actress and because actors are always reinventing themselves, well, other stories are being put upon them. So again, it's a different kind of translator too, because they're all just interpreting. So it's like agency and then a lack of agency at the same time. But I didn't see her as being someone who was in a withering age, or, I mean, I see her as being sexy, mature, you know. And Tomas, her husband, he seems older to me, more staid and set in his ways. I want to ask, and this seems like a kind of strange question to ask a novelist. I don't usually ask novelists this, but I really believe in for art's sake. It's not necessarily to teach readers a lesson or to change them. But I had a dream last night, and so I think it's like my subconscious wanting me to ask this. And I was discussing with an environmental journalist. I said, but it isn't enough saying that we just need to inform. We need to inspire action and transformation. Because another part of my life is doing environmental interviews, you know, change behaviors. But I'm wondering, what might you want readers to experience or realize about themselves? Or what did you realize in the writing of the book?
Thank you, Mia. I wonder if I could just briefly loop back to your previous comment about interpretation, because this novel is the kind of third in what I see as a little set of books that are all talking to each other that I've written, and they all feature unnamed female protagonists who have experienced varying degrees of passivity and agency in their lives. They're all women who speak the words of other people. In the first one I'm speaking of, A Separation, the central character is a translator. In the second one, Intimacy, is a central character is a simultaneous interpreter. And in this one, the central character is an actress who is interpreting parts, but again, performing parts that she's given to play by other people. And so I'm really interested both in the kind of formal aspect of characters who are channeling language, who are speaking the words of other people. And I'm also very much interested in this question of passivity, because I think there is a tendency in fiction, or certainly in the way we talk about fiction, to place a lot of emphasis on agency. And so I teach creative writing, and often in my workshops, a student will critique another writer's work by saying this character doesn't have any agency. And the implication is that a character without agency in some way is implausible or not compelling in narrative terms. But my sense is that the reality is that all of us live with a limited amount of agency, but we might live with the illusion that we have a great deal of agency. So I'm very much interested in characters who are actually aware of how little agency they actually have, who have passivity forced upon them, who perhaps even embrace their passivity to a certain extent, but eventually seek out locations where they can enact their agency.
Absolutely. And I think that it's a sign of maturity to realize that there's more than one truth. There's so many different perspectives.
Yes.
And I think that if you look at us from a distance, human beings, like, well, say we observe animals, right? And from a distance, it looks like, oh, they're repeating the same paths. It was just passed on to them. They've just a sense of fate. Likewise, in our life, you know, if we looked at us far enough, we're like that. We're like the ants. We're like the birds that follow the same migration. It's only us that obsess on these details that we feel we have control over. And we may, to a degree, but just a degree.
I want to answer the second part of your question, which is what I hope readers will take away from the book. And I think that is related maybe to this question of passivity and agency. I think in our culture, we are encouraged to relate to story and narrative in a somewhat passive way. Even the vocabulary that people use, so binge watching, for example, this idea that you kind of gorge yourself on story in some way. But I actually think reading is one of the most profoundly interactive experiences that exists. I think it is one that is most rewarding when we are fully engaged, when we are doing a lot of interpretive work, when we are trying to understand possible meanings. And I think what I would like, or my hope would be, that people read the book and are willing to engage with it and see engagement as fundamental to reading. So there is not a kind of clear lesson in the book. It's a book that has a lot of ambiguity. It's a book that asks a reader to make choices and decisions about what they think it is. And I think what I hoped for was to create a reading experience where readers would feel like they had quite a lot of agency to make the book.
Exactly. We're interpreters as we read. And I don't know enough about Japanese, but you mentioned a character called Hana, and I think that means flower, but it also means, is it fireworks?
Like hanabi is fireworks.
Hi, fireworks. Yeah. Like, even within a word, don't even take a sentence, it can contain worlds. It can open up like a flower.
Yes.
So in intimacies, and I think also in audition, in your different books, your protagonist exists in a constant state of in-betweenness between cultures and languages, even moral positions. Mm-hmm. It was mentioned that she's an interpreter at The Hague.
The narrator in Intimacies is working as a simultaneous interpreter in The Hague at a war crimes tribunal that is loosely based on the International Criminal Court. And in the novel, she is tasked with interpreting specifically for a former president who has been accused of war crimes. And so there's this kind of sense of intimacy and complicity and confusion about what it means to be the voice of somebody who has perpetrated genocide.
Yeah, could not be higher stakes than that. I'm just wondering, talking about this sense of displacement that she has, how that shapes her identity. How do you see this theme of uncertainty central to your work as a whole? And how have you been changed by the places you've lived and the languages you've inhabited?
I think it's absolutely central to my work. I, of course, have lived between cultures, but I almost think of it in terms of not between, but more that I've lived much of my life in the United States, but I've not been only oriented towards American culture as an influence. So from a very young age, I was reading books from a lot of different places. And that's one of the wonderful benefits of growing up as children of immigrants, is that my parents did not have a sense of what the American or English literary canon was at all. They chose the books that interested them, and they gave me a lot of fiction and translation to read. And so the set of influences that I grew up with was quite widespread. And, you know, of course, I grew up between languages as well. I had a very, very powerful sense from a young age of how language plays a central role in shaping character. You know, I would see my parents, for example, they literally felt like different people depending on whether or not they were speaking English or Japanese. I saw how language was related to power, that if you spoke the primary language of the place where you were, you had more power and you earned more respect almost immediately. I saw the degree to which having an accent, for example, cause people to attribute so many narratives and identities to you. I saw that really firsthand. So those are all things that were very much in play in intimacies, and to a certain extent, though perhaps less directly, also in play in audition, the central character is an Asian American actress. It's a very interesting time to think about Asian representation in film and movies and television in particular. For a period of her life, she was not given the parts that gave her the requisite material for her to make her work. She was given parts that felt thin, that felt like stereotypes, that often were quite literally speechless. At a certain point, she hits a cusp where something in the culture shifts, and then she is given these different parts to play, and that's where this novel falls. But I think this question of how language and how other people's perception both restricts and allows a certain kind of movement and articulation of identity is something that I'm very interested in.
Yes, we should say, I think people know me, but we're both Asian American, although yes. I live in Paris most of the time. And I knew, not because I assumed, but it's mentioned just peripherally in audition. It's just hinted at in that language, and you have to figure it out. But what I loved about this, and this doesn't often happen to me, when I'm reading, I always think either I learned something, does it transform me? Does it make the engine of my imagination go? So as I'm reading this, it made me write a story that... Oh. Completely different, but it's just because you leave that space, right? You leave that space. And so completely different narrative, but I just wanted to say that, yeah, it inspired me because that sense of mystery anticipation, it's just like, there's so many other stories, like everything has to be filled, big plots explained, and this just gave enough. So it's definitely leaving readers wanting for more and even writing themselves, writing their own story.
That's a wonderful thing to say. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. And also we should say that you live in New York. It's the first time you've written about New York.
Yes, it is. You know, New York is kind of a scary place to write about because there is such a huge canon of books and books that are very important to me that are set in New York. Whether it's Henry James or it's Rosemary's Baby, there are just really powerful novels that have been set in this city. And so I think for a long time, I hesitated to write something here. But at the same time, I've lived here for 15 years. And I think having written so many characters who were, as you say, physically displaced, characters who are literally arriving in a new location and trying to understand the world that they're seeing around them, people who feel a real gap between themselves and the world that they're inhabiting. I think in this novel, I felt that that gap was inside the character. It's a kind of schism, that sense of distance between two things was internal to the character rather than between the character and New York City itself. So in Intimacies, the character arrives in The Hague and she feels very displaced. She feels very much that she's not of this city. Similarly, in A Separation, the character goes to Greece and she's looking for her partner who she's separated from. And the landscape is bewildering to her in some way. In this novel, the landscape of New York City is not bewildering to the central character. It's where she's lived for very, very many years. It's actually the internal landscape that is in some way confounding her. So I think that's part of what allowed me to write something in this city where I've lived for quite a long time. I think I also realized that rather than thinking about it as writing against a canon or writing with the weight of the canon on me, I also thought, well, the canon of New York novels can actually lift you up in so many ways. You know, it is so deeply evocative. People have an image of New York. It's very powerful. You can lean on things like narratives of unease that you see in something like Invisible Man or Rosemary's Baby and kind of use that to create the texture and atmosphere of the world that I was trying to write.
Yeah, and you discussed landscape, and I mentioned briefly, we have arts interviews and environmental interviews. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if you could reflect on the inspiration or your memories of the beauty and wonder of the natural world. How do you draw on that? Because there's a real sense of harmony, of course, in your writing.
I mean, my two last novels, and particularly A Separation, which is set in the southern Peloponnese, in the Mani region, landscape is incredibly important, and it is a novel that is set shortly after wildfires have decimated the landscape. And I mean, it's by no means climate fiction, but part of the instability that the character feels is because there have been these fires and there has been mass destruction and economic instability in the both literal landscape and social and cultural landscape of Greece. And that is something that she's trying to understand as she arrives there. In Intimacies, which is set in a more urban setting, one of the most important emotional scenes takes place on the beach when the character, having spent, you know, 6 months or something in the city, for the first time realizes that this landscape is actually one that she visited a very long time ago with her father, who has passed away at the opening of the book. And suddenly in that moment, in inhabiting that landscape, she's able to reconcile pieces of her memory and pieces of her past that she hadn't been able to reconcile earlier. And that's actually an experience that happened to me. I wrote the first draft of Intimacies, and this scene that's on the beach in the very end of the book was not in the draft. The entire time I had the sense that the city was familiar to me, but I didn't know why. You know, I did a research trip there and I did all the writerly things where I marked the house where I thought the character would be living, and I did her commute between her home and the court, and I, you know, went to different restaurants. I did all of that research. The entire time I thought, this city feels a little bit familiar to me, but I don't know why. It was actually only when I finished writing the book that I realized I had spent 2 summers there as a child with my family. And I'd had these very powerful memories of being on the dunes with my father when I was a child. And for much of my adulthood, I didn't know exactly where that memory had taken place. I didn't know the geographical location. And suddenly I realized that it was actually in The Hague. And then I, you know, put it into Google Maps, and I suddenly was able to say, oh, that's that amusement park that we went to a couple of times, and this is where we lived, and that's that. And it was a really astonishing experience of suddenly having some piece of my past, these memories of my father who did die over a decade ago, suddenly having them anchored in a concrete place, and they had a new reality to me. That was very, very powerful, and that took place in landscape.
Yes, that is so important. I mean, I think what the arts do is remind us of who we are and who we love, and that's how we get to understand ourselves and the world. So for you, what is the importance of the arts and how you learned about the world through books?
I like to quote an old professor of mine, Michael Wood, and he said that half of what I think I've experienced in real life, I've only read in a book. And so much of how I understand the world, not only understand the world, but directly experience it, is through reading. I strongly feel that reading is one of the most intimate acts that we can do. Every time I pick up a book, I'm opening up my mind to the mind of another person. It's an act of tremendous intimacy. It's an act of hope and of real faith and vulnerability. There's real communion in reading. I think when we are atomized, things really fall apart. Social structures lose their power. And so to me, reading is a way of connecting to other people in a very, very powerful way. There's nothing about reading that feels frivolous or unessential in any way. There's nothing about fiction that feels that it's not serving a purpose. I think it brings people together in community, and I think that's one of the most powerful things that art can do.
Well, thank you for sharing those intimate parts of yourself and your writing with us. And thank you, Katie Kitamura, for sharing your stories, which allow us to meditate on art, ambiguity, identity, how we shape language as language shapes us, and the importance of maintaining a mindset open to beauty and a sense of discovery. Thank you for adding your voice to the creative process.
Thank you, Mia.
Kitamura's edition, in many ways, explores language of split selves. It made me think immediately of a phrase I like, to be beside yourself. I've always thought that to be a very densely evocative phrase, that the thing that moves you becomes a spatial force, shifting you out of yourself so that you sit beside yourself, beholding yourself from both within and the outside. And what happens then after you become beside yourself? Do the two selves turn towards each other? Would they recognize each other? Would they react with fear? I feel that the narrator, in addition, lives and acts in that moment before that potential turn, and I'm very drawn to that rift between selves that is so palpable it is nearly physical. Kitamura is interested in people who feel separate from the place they are in, and in addition, that gap is inside the character. As Kitamura says, that sense of distance between two things is internal to the character rather than between the character and New York City itself. I love that idea. A distance between two things being also the distance between you and yourself. How do these internal and external fractures sync up? Kitamura makes me curious about the link between one's inner places and external places. When you are quote-unquote out of place, when you are beside yourself, what do you call the place that you are in instead? Is it well lit? And does anyone else share that place with you? Does this place have a name, or is it simply the other place, the place other than the place you wanted to be in? And is this a place you can make livable? Kitamura also shows us that it is important to learn to write from that place that is out of place, as her translingual and transnational characters evidence. For me, audition suggests that creating art, theater, or poetry, or fiction might require you to recognize that your creative self is also an unfamiliar person, and the creative space an unfamiliar space. Because, as a writer, I don't always feel at home in the physical and mental or psychic places I write from. I don't always feel that I belong in my creativity, and that agitates me. But maybe that is a productive place to write from, because that agitation is also the starting point of a journey. A search. Perhaps the place to write from is one in which you lose yourself and you lose your name, so that you must set out instead of remaining where you are, so that you must rebuild your name and the names of places. The Creative Process Podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation. This interview was conducted by Mia Funk with the participation of collaborating universities and students. Associate interview producers on this episode were Katie Foster and Henny Zhang. The Creative Process is produced by Mia Funk, with additional production support by Sophie Garnier. Wintertime was composed by Nicholas Anadolis and performed by the Athenian Trio. We hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. If you'd like to get involved with our creative community exhibitions, podcasts, or submit your creative works for review, just follow us on Instagram at Creative Process Podcast and send us a DM. Thanks for listening.